Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 29th of April, recording at 7:21 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Well, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, somewhat longer audio, but I will also touch on the shorter-term outlook because it's particularly significant, I think, at this time for a number of markets. Now, first, starting with global stock markets, and especially for the benefit of the many new subscribers who are coming on, welcome all. I would say that first, the most important background factor in my view is that Wall Street is in a secular bear market, long defined by this service as a generational long process of PE ratio contraction and rising yields, as investors become less enamored of the stock market, realizing that they're not in a 1990s environment, therefore they become more conservative and demand more in terms of yield. And also better valuations in terms of multiples. Now, whether these secular bear markets are reminiscent of that period from, say, 1967-68 through to 1980 with the low in 1974, just to describe that period in a little bit more detail, where we had more or less a glass ceiling on the Dow Jones Industrial Average at about 1,025. The market would rally up to that level and then get bungee jumps to the downside, of which the most severe by far was in 1974, marking the bear market low. Now, although the valuation lows, for the most part, came somewhat later. But these secular bear markets usually end with multiples for most major stocks are around single figures, in other words, under 10. And the yield can easily be 6% or more. I'm talking about the yield on the S&P index. So we're obviously a long way away from that. And you can see a couple of interesting historic charts that are posted on the website today covering the S&P yield and also multiple, using all the data that we were able to get our hands on Bloomberg, which is basically all the data that Bloomberg provides. Okay, now I said that the difference between, I was going to say the difference between, say, a 67 through 81 type of bear market with a glass ceiling for the Dow at 1,025, or the more severe type of overall bear market decline, such as we saw in Japan following 1990, depends very much on money supply, monetary policy, in other words. And if there's a fair amount of liquidity around, then markets will do somewhat better. There'll be a trade-off in terms of higher inflation. Japan had quite constrained money supply for much of its bear market, therefore more deflationary pressures, certainly no inflation, and a weaker stock market performance overall. Certainly the Greenspan Fed shows every sign of erring on the side of too much liquidity rather than too little liquidity, although liquidity is contracting at the moment. And of course Greenspan is in his final term, and a lot will depend on who the next chairman of the Federal Reserve is and what sort of policies that chairman instigates. But my hunch is that we'll see fairly abundant inflationary liquidity policies overall, not in any sort of linear fashion, that once inflation begins to rear up a little bit, then the central bank will take that opportunity to try to rein it in, as we've been seeing in recent months. But the trouble is that as recession then beckons, or worse, that the central bank starts to pump the economy up once again. But overall, I would expect the secular bear market on Wall Street to resemble more what we saw from the 67 through 81 period, rather than what we saw in Japan. But as I say, it does really depend on on monetary policy. Now, within that secular bear market, we'll get some good medium-term rallies. We just completed one. That was the rally that started in March 2003 and ended, give and take, a few weeks for among various different indices, but on average, in March 2005, say it ended. All the technical evidence subsequent to those highs has indicated that that rally is well and truly over, and that we are in a medium-term correction, which is a very dangerous period for equity investors, where there really isn't any bolt hole. And this business of trying to find defensive stocks or stocks that would do better than anything else is frankly a bit of a mug's game. Now, that said, I do have some long-only subscribers who are investment managers, and so where do you actually go? And that's a bit tough, but I would retreat into higher covered yielders. I would go into some of the non well, I might go into some of the cyclicals, for instance, mining shares. I would feel, following the recent shakeout that we've seen, class companies such as Rio Tinto, which I own, and Billiton, which I look forward to owning in the sometime within the medium-term future, are have pulled back to areas of potential support. But I'm certainly not advocating that anyone who can sit in cash go out and buy those at this time. I like those companies a great deal, but they had spectacular runs and could easily see a further correction as global stock markets see a further correction. And I think the risk of that further correction in global stock markets is quite high. Right now, in the very short term, global stock markets are mostly oversold, but they may not be oversold enough to produce more than the occasional steadying ranging period, a little bit of a dead cat bounce. And I don't think that there's big upside potential at this stage. But factors could shift a little bit. For instance, right now the oil price is weak, moving back under $50 once again. That certainly will encourage equity investors a bit, because strong oil prices had been a major worry for quite some time. But more about that in a moment. Now, the point I want to make, though, is to go back to something that veteran subscribers will have heard me mention so many times, what I describe as the Wall Street leash effect. Leash as in the leash one uses when walking the dog. And that leash, when Wall Street is falling, when Wall Street is clearly in a downward trend, and that's the condition that applies today, in my view, then the leash is being reined in, and other markets will be unlikely to resist that trend. And the weaker Wall Street is, the more likely it is that not only will other developed markets, but all emerging markets fall, not just as much as, say, the S&P or the Dow, but even more so, because they tend to be higher beta, thinner markets. Conversely, when Wall Street is steady, let alone rallying, then the leash is loosened, and markets that have very good fundamentals, or at least the perception of very good fundamentals, do extremely well. And in this secular trend, those that will often do the very best during those periods will be some of the Asian emerging markets because of good GDP growth performance. India would be one of my top is definitely my top candidate in that group. And the also resources-backed markets would do extremely well. And then that's going to be markets such as India. It's going to be a number of the South American markets as well will do extremely well due to the secular bull trends for most resources. But I emphasize right now that despite short-term overbought conditions, we're in a negative period. We're in a medium-term correction for Wall Street when stock markets tend to fall more quickly than they rise. And I think the current environment is quite dangerous. That said, oil price down $2.25 as I speak. That's helping Wall Street to get a bit of a Friday period of pre-weekend short covering, but I don't think we're going to see big rallies, and this is not a time to be buying, in my opinion. If we get rallies that are, say, stronger than we've seen over the last month, and I think on a lot of statistics, April's been pretty diabolical month for equity. So if we get somewhat bigger rallies, I think those are opportunities to lighten long positions. Okay, I think that pretty much covers what I want to say about stock markets at this stage. I'm playing, except to say that I'm playing this mostly by holding on to some of my what I regard as core positions, which are in some mining funds, in some Asian funds, particularly in India. And mind you, in this environment, I would lighten in those sectors. I would lighten again on real strength. And I'm talking about pension fund, self-administered pension fund positions that I'm holding, energy funds that I'm quite unlikely to disturb. But I have continued to hedge quite aggressively, albeit asymmetrically. I don't feel that I need to hedge in energy, but I've been steadily opening short positions in the U.S. and European stock market indices, and I haven't finished that process. And when these markets rally a bit, I am quite tempted to add to short positions. Okay, now let's move on to government bonds, which have been quite steady over the last month and a half. Or so. My feeling is, in terms of the very big picture, that the global bull market in government bonds ended in June of 2003, and that we are in a very lengthy topping out process for government bond prices around the world. In other words, bottoming out phase for the yields for long-dated government bonds. People are sufficiently concerned about deflation, recession, or worse, that will keep money flowing into this sector, particularly when we're experiencing a worldwide stock market sell-off. But the yields are historically very unattractive. I maintain that central banks in recent years have certainly sown the seeds of another inflationary cycle, and that inflation genie is out of the bottle. That doesn't mean that we'll see inflation everywhere. We still have pockets of deflation. There's nothing unusual about that, and they're particularly in the manufacturing sector. And concern over job security is certainly keeping the lid on wage inflation. But wage inflation is something that tends to build up at the very latter stages of inflationary cycles, really after inflation has been at a punishingly high level for a decade or more, and then it finally moves center stage as far as the public consciousness is concerned. We get some quite substantial pressure, upward pressure on wages. So we're nowhere near that stage. But again, as I've said before, if you pay the household bills, you'll know, and I don't care what country you're in, if you pay the household bills, you'll know darn well that the inflation genie is out of the bottle. So I really don't like these government bond markets. I appreciate that when stock markets are quite vulnerable, they're a temporary haven, but we're not talking about value here. And the big story over the next 10 to 15 years, in my view, will be falling bond prices, not in any linear fashion, but in rolling waves as markets tend to unfold, or market secular trends tend to unfold, and rising long-dated government bond yields. And there's certainly plenty of supply out there, and that will continue to grow. Not least because governments will try to maintain growth by increasing public spending. And we certainly see that in the United States. We certainly see that in the UK. We certainly see it in continental Europe. We certainly see it in China. You know, it's a story that's being repeated pretty much around the world. Okay, what about currencies? Now, we don't get the generational long trends in the currency markets, if only because no country can withstand a perpetually strong currency. And when faced with that type of situation, they just increase the supply of that currency. And first, they'll probably cut the interest rates, but eventually, it's the supply, the amount that they actually print, that's the key variable overall. Now, right now, we've got, you could say overall, we're in the, well, my view is that we're in the latter stages of the dollar's bear market in terms of price moves, if not time. In other words, the bottoming out process, when it starts, commences. And I don't think it has commenced yet, but it could be quite lengthy. Now, overall, my forecast for this year has been mainly a ranging activity by the dollar. There were too many bears. Really late last year and the beginning of this year, huge carry positions. US interest rates are moving up, and that is likely to, well, it has been lending some support to the US dollar. But I feel that the upside is not significant, and indeed the dollar has taken a little bit of a hit in here today. But as I say, most of the activity I think will be ranging between, in terms of the US dollar index, between, so 85, 86 on the upside. Any flurry above that level is likely to be short-lived. And pretty much 80 at the lower end, that's the main range for this year, I believe. I do feel that before the dollar's bear market is over, though, that we will probably see the dollar index break to new all-time lows. That would be taking it below levels that we saw in the early 1990s, when it got down to about 78 and a bit. I have never been in the school that said the US dollar will collapse. I think, though, that moving on from that the main story will be the overall weakness of fiat currencies, paper money currencies, in other words, relative to gold, not today, but over the next 10 to 15 years. As I say, I would expect them to gold to way outperform the paper currencies, just because governments will certainly be increasing the supply of currency in play to help to offset slow GDP growth. And therefore, gold to me is very much a core position. It's also a trading vehicle. At the moment, the environment is not particularly auspicious for gold because we've got the rising short-term interest rates, particularly in the US. We have the steadier US dollar. We have liquidity contraction that's taking place, and that tends to weigh on all assets, gold included. But whereas we can see a number of questionable companies in, say, the tech sector and other industries, or you get companies that are just not that well managed or face such stiff competitive pressure, such as General Motors and Ford, where share prices can go down and stay down indefinitely. I mean, gold sell-offs are a buying opportunity, in my view. And I maintain that gold today is roughly where the Standard & Poor's 500 index was in the mid-1980s. In other words, in the early stages of a secular bull market. Only the early stages of a secular bull market tend to be quite quiet, characterized mostly by sideways ranging. You'll get months and months and months of ranging, and then you get a small step upwards, and then lots and lots more ranging. And so really, it's a stealth bull market. Most people don't even recognize it, let alone acknowledge it. And then these gradually build up steam in the last few years are when you get the main percentage gains as the trend goes into an accelerating overdrive before reaching its climactic peak. And I think that other precious metals are likely to perform accordingly. Silver is high beta gold. That's my favorite as a trading vehicle overall. It's been platinum that's led the rally, with palladium very much the tail end, Charlie and the most undervalued at the moment, but say very much the laggard precious metal in the cycle. And looking at other industrial, at other commodities, particularly the industrial commodities, metals, industrial metals. I'm talking now about aluminium, copper, lead, tin, zinc, and nickel. All but zinc are still trading in backwardation, meaning there's a premium of the spot price over the futures prices. And the comparison is usually the spot price versus the third month price on the London Metal Exchange. And those backwardations indicate a real user demand, not just hedge fund and other speculative buying. And that demand has occurred because of a synchronized global economic recovery, which is now fraying at the edges, certainly slowing down, to put it mildly. And that creates a bit of a headwind for these metals. China and India would be the big stories, but if the US were to slip into recession, which is a fairly high risk, at some stage over the next 18 months to 2 years, then certainly that would affect China and there would be less demand for the metals. But we're not in that situation at the moment. At the moment, currently, we're debating between whether the US GDP growth is occurring just above the 3% level, albeit a little bit of hedonic reporting in that figure, or is it somewhat better than that? And China's, a lot of people are concerned about a significant slowdown in China and perhaps even a hard landing. That's not a fact here today. So thus the backwardations continuing in these metals. Now, I do regard them as all being in secular bull market trends, but I have emphasized the short-term headwinds, the risk of slower growth and perhaps even recession in some of the leading developed country economies, the higher interest rates that we've seen, China's attempt to prevent overheating to a certain extent in its economy. All of these factors, plus the global stock market sell-off, contracting liquidity, which affects the hedge funds, all of this has created headwinds. All of these factors have created a headwind for the industrial metal prices. So this is a more risky period. I'm playing the sector, but very, very lightly. I have a bit of copper and a bit of lead at this time. My expiration dates come up I think it's the 20th of May, and I'm hoping that prices remain steady enough over the next few weeks to allow me to run those LME contracts nearly to full term so that I can reap most of the backwardation, and that backwardation is still present. But this is not a time to be loading up on metals. And however, as I've said with gold, any decent sell-off, that's a buying opportunity. Ditto the industrial metals, any decent sell-off. And this can be a very volatile sector. And that is a buying opportunity. Now, moving on to crude oil. Here also, I feel we have a secular bull market in play, but the current situation is one of a medium-term correction, and there are lots of factors pointing to that. The technical evidence of an upside failure following the new high that we saw earlier in the month. And we also had some of those giveaway signals, the Goldman Sachs talk of a spike to $100 or possible spike to $100. The talk, well, the Economist cover that I was sent and featured in today's comment. The main factor, though, was the loss of the backwardations. Now, the backwardations had been very, very persistent, pretty much for the better part of the last 3 years. And as they were lost, that indicate as they d were replaced by contangos, in other words, spot price below the futures prices, that indicated that nearby supply shortages had ended, and that's what's causing this medium-term correction in the oil price. Now, I said that we would almost certainly see it go below $50. I said that earlier in the week. It's currently $49.50 on the NYME price, but I said I'd be surprised if we saw 40, or I rated that as only a 1 in 3 chance at most, and that's still very much my view. And I want to emphasize that this is a long-term secular bull market for energy, and the main reason for that is that we have refining bottlenecks. We have the huge surge in demand coming from emerging markets led by China and India, and we have certainly bottlenecks in terms of nuclear power. The green lobbyists, so forth, particularly in Europe, but also the United States, had really resulted in a couple of decades of closures of nuclear plants, so certainly a reduction in output from that sector. And I tend to regard nuclear as the only viable solution to the immediate energy problem that we're actually experiencing. And I think that for that reason, we will see the uranium price in a secular bull market. I think we will see more countries opting for an increase in nuclear power output. So it's a hugely, hugely important industry. But I was talking about oil and I digressed from that. In the short term, I think it's sideways to somewhat lower, but with very much within the confines of a secular bull market. So if I see the petroleum prices fall back, and as a investor speculator, I'd like to see a little bit of an overshoot, which we often get in markets, certainly anything close to the $40 level, and I'll be looking to open some longs in petroleum contracts, and hopefully that would pull natural gas below the $6 level, and that would certainly interest me in terms of acquiring some of the natural gas contracts, which I've traded quite actively over the last couple of years. I'd be interested in doing that once again. And finally, in the agricultural commodities, now that's a tough area in terms of making money, and really you one does best by waiting until we've seen sharp sell-offs and then commencing buying on a baby steps basis, in other words, very, very lightly. But the main attraction in this sector right now is the fact that most agricultural commodities are historically cheap, not only relative to their own price history, but relative to pretty well everything else around, from industrial commodities to stock markets and house prices. So there will always be some interest, but the key variable there is output, and that is usually weather and to a lesser extent disease related, and that's the weather is obviously a massive wild card. But when prices are really quite depressed, as I say, they have some speculative appeal, but it's a tricky area, big contangos. Which make it costly to hold those positions beyond the very short term. But to say they have provided their opportunities, some of which have been cited by this service over the last few years, and hopefully we'll be able to identify more opportunities as well. So that's pretty much it, folks, except I will say the short covering rally in Wall Street continues as I close, Dow up about 110 points. I should also mention that Monday is a bank holiday in the UK, So while I may be in here doing a little catch-up work, I don't think there'll be any comment of the day or audio on Monday. Meanwhile, have a spectacular weekend.